Accession number 24187, Reel 4.
Mr. Percy, Reel 4. You were in tents when you were at Burton Leonard.
No, we're in Utz. The Utz were there.
Yes, I was going to ask you if you got Utz.
We went there and they were in tents at first. Now when they put the Utz up, we're in Utz. I think there was a coke house and a big hut for 11 men. That's what it was about.
And did you have proper beds then?
No, we slept on the floor with palliasses. We didn't have any beds. We just slept on the floor. You had a palliasse on you. You used your kit bag for a pillow. And after that, we got some orange boxes and we put them on the wall to keep our kit in, you know. It was all done. And some of the lads bought camp beds. They got camp beds and... At first, it was only the sergeant had a camp bed there, but after it had been a few weeks, everybody got a camp bed. That was when, you know. And after that, that was when we were at camp, really. And
things would be a bit more comfortable.
Yeah. And after that, we've got little things. In the hut, we put orange boxes up and... We put curtains up so it can look a lot better. And of course we got rifle racks and we made ourselves. And that was it. We just, the cook, one of the lads was a cook, like, and he started from scratch. But after a while he got them paraffin heaters and that, you know, for the cook, the Dixie on and things like that. And... because we didn't have a stove or anything.
But it was say, how were the huts heated? How were the huts heated?
No, the one that heated. There was no heat in the hut. Because it was September when we left there. Like.
You didn't go through the winter there?
We didn't go through the winter there.
Do you remember early on, once you were there, that some of the... the men, you know, the older men, the more mature men, went out into the other units and you got a whole influx of young men, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds.
Well, we got... Later on, we got a few National Service lads. They come in and some of the elder men, you know, actually the one that fit, you know. Some of them had no teeth, really, but they were territorial, like, you know. And I think they moved them somewhere else. And we got a few... National Service people in.
Do you remember where they were coming from?
One from Scotland. I remember his name. I've forgotten his name. I'll come back to his life.
But he came from Scotland?
He came from Scotland.
Did they settle in okay?
Oh, aye. And, of course, that... Ripon wasn't so far from my home, and he was a mate of mine, like, and when we got leave, I used to take him to my house in Sunderland, fetch him home, and of course we used to get some lifts from Ripon, that was on the main road, like, really, and I used to fetch him home to Sunderland and put him up for leave, so he got to know Sunderland a bit. He was a mate of mine, and then when we got a 72-hour pass, which is longer, we used to go up to Glasgow, to his home. You know, we were good friends, good mates. Just remember his name.
Do you remember ATS being attached to the units?
No, we never had any ATS. The HQ in Ripon, I think they had the ATS. But that wasn't until later. At first we didn't have any ATS, but later I think but they didn't come on the searchlights. They were in HQ. And
how did you keep fit? Did you have to do some kind of fitness training, PT?
Well, I kept fit because I was on jankers a lot of the time. And there I used to get failed punishment.
What kind of thing were you up to? What kind of things were you up to get that?
Oh, well, if you didn't... One place was I was on duty on sentry, and I was talking to these two girls, and this officer come along, and anyway, I saluted him and that, and he walked past. Anyway, he sent a message, I've got to see him in the morning at 9 o'clock. Well, I didn't know, I was on a charge, he just says see me tomorrow at 9 o'clock. So I went in, and I had 1 foot outside the gate, talking to these two lasses. Of course, the lasses used to come. Anyway, the next month was funny. He had a hut separate, you know, to, and I knocked on his door, and he says, come in. He must have thought it was a batman. And when I went in, he was standing there in the bath, in a tin bath, stark belly knacked. Anyway, he shouted, screamed nearly, get out! Anyway, then I knew I was on. The sergeant says, you're on a charge, man. I said, well, he didn't say you're on a charge. He says, just see me at the 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And anyway, I got charged. Well, in there, 7 days CB, things like that, you know, confined to barracks. Well, we were confined to barracks in any case, so they couldn't name it, but they used to have a full pack running up and down, like some things like that, you know, just to get a bit of punishment. And that was it. Like water off a dog's back, like, you know. So I was in stux with this officer. I was in, you know, this officer, he didn't like me and I didn't like him, like. So while I was some of these camps, like, I used to hate the sight of them. And
what was his name? Do you remember his name?
No. I mean, it's 60-odd years. I can't remember his name. But he was not a territorial army officer. He wasn't a territorial army officer. And when I first met him, he was quizzing us, you know, where I'd been and this and that. And I thought he was all right, but he seemed to get the knife in me.
Did you have any PT on a morning?
Yeah. They used to run us around the village, you know, get your PT kit on, and they used to, because it was daylight, there was no day, and they used to run us around the village, showing us off to the village people. And, well, it was funny, I think the sergeant, he had a strong voice, and I think he was only practicing his shouting and that. And he was dressed like he used to polish his gum boots like a German. And I knew his name, they called him Longhorn. That was him, Sergeant Longhorn. And he loved to be out in the field shouting his head off. Well, if you, in them days, if you had a good strong voice, you were made a sergeant, because you could shout the drills, you know. There was one bloke, he was a tatter when we were in Sibley Street, like. And we knew him, he was a ragman. He finished up, he was a corporal. And there was a bloke was a ratter. He was a colour sergeant. I forget his name. He used to be a ratter, you know, catching rats for the council, you know. And he was a colour sergeant. But all could insult you and shout at you, you know. But they all had good, strong voices, you know, and that's why they were made sergeants, and that's what we said, because they didn't have any brains.
What did you do for recreation? This must have been pretty boring in daily world.
It was against the rules that we used to play 9-card brag. You know, it's cards mostly. And, of course, we didn't have a dartboard out like that. It was mostly 9-card brag. Playing cards, mostly. Some of the lads used to play a game called Napoleon. And, you know, you could lose your wages on it on these games, like. But we got pie, you know, because we didn't get much. It was only pennies and halfpennies all gambling. That's all.
And you say that was against the rules?
Yeah, it was against the rules, gambling.
So when did it take place? You'd have to be out of sight of any officers, or?
Well, I mean, we only seen the officers now and again, because the highest rank was only a sergeant.
And he didn't bother you? He didn't stop you?
He didn't bother, no.
Cause any problems losing money like that in gambling?
No, I don't think. Well, nobody complained. Like, if they couldn't afford it, they didn't play, that's all. They would spend, in them days, they would spend about a shilling, and if they didn't win, they'd pack it in. Like, that's, it wasn't real gambling, you know. But there was one place where I got caught gambling, playing cards, and we were put on a charge for it. And they confiscated the money, which was only a couple of seconds. say, a couple in them days was a lot of money to us, you know, but and nowadays it would be like pittance, you know.
You've mentioned that you got into trouble on occasions. What kind of punishments could you get? I mean, you've mentioned confined to barracks, which didn't mean a great deal where you were.
Well, you're confined to barracks in any case. So the only punishment he could give you is to stop your leave, you know. Well, but he only could give you a fortnight, I think is the most, unless they give you detention, which is 56 days. I mean, that was for absent without leave, you know. If you went home and stopped home and didn't come back, that was a serious charge. Or if you were found sleeping on duty, things like that, that was a detention, you know, if you did a serious. But if you had a button loose, or you didn't have your cap on, or you failed to suit the officer, they were only minor. They were only minor charges. And Jenny's CB, well, they couldn't punish her, really, because, as I say, you can't find the barracks in any case. And I think this is what they couldn't. There's one or two times when they stop your leave, which is we've been in ACAC. You had to recognise aircraft. That was one of the essential things, recognising aircraft. But before you went on leave, you had to recognise three aircraft. They showed you a silhouette of an aircraft. And if you didn't recognise them, they would say, well, I'm stopping your leave. So it made you recognise them aircraft, you know, Stukas, Messerschmitts, Dorniers, you know, the Fiesler Storch, which was like a biplane, like a German, and things like that. And they used to, every time you went on leave, they showed you these silhouettes. And if you failed to recognise them, or got them wrong, they'd say, well, we're stopping your leave, and they would say, stop your leave. Maybe it's for a week or a fortnight or something like that. That was one of the things he used to do. The punishments in that way, you know.
Did it include cookhouse duties?
Well, your day fatigues, which is your pale spoons. Well, I mean, there's only 11 of us on the camp. That's not like a regiment or a company. I mean, you could pale the spoons in, say, 20 minutes for the 11 men, you know. So you. And you used to help the cook, wash the dishes, things like that, you know. And just when one of the camps I was on, got CB, and they made us plant taties, because it was like dig for victory. And I think I planted them, I pulled them out, and I peeled them on jackets, because I was, it was boring, that was. When Binns was on fire and had bombed Sunderland, we could see it from where we were at Willingdon. And I think we were evacuated. You know, we never seen a hungry man like, you know. And it was boring. And I think blokes were fed up. And that, you know, and the only thing you look forward to was coming home on leave. And my mother and my sister, when Binns was on fire, my sister was putting the firebombs out. And my mother, I mean, she was elderly in them days, she was supplying the water for the. I mean, they were helping, and yet we were at Willingdon, and where we were, it seemed as though we were evacuated. We were just looking, they were doing the war work, not us. In them, it was. And it was a phony war. I call it a phony war, because the only blokes what was getting killed in that was the lads what were in the Merchant Navy. They were the ones what were saying the war, not us. In fact, Bert and Leonard were out in the country, And Willington, you know, because Willington is aware, and what we were guarding there, I don't know. I think they were just...
Before we come to that, did you have local dances for the local girls, or with local girls?
Well, Willington, there was... I couldn't dance myself, like, but they had a dance hall, and Willington was only a small place, like, and they invited us to different community places, and you got the free pitches. You went to the pitches, you got in for nothing, and they were very good to us.
When did you go to Willington?
It'd be 1940. Because when we used to move from Burton Leonard to a place called Spofforth, Harrogate, which is away. I mean, it was in the country, and we went to Hemingham, which was a place. We went down. There was only our detachment went to Hemingham.
Did you go to Hemingham before you went to Willington?
Yes, this is all little place it used to be.
So Hemingham's down the south of England.
It was in Lincolnshire, and they said that Dorneys were coming in and planting mines in the docks, you know, in the dock area, and they used to come in the dock, land on the water, and plant the bombs, or so the landmines, or the sea mines, and debunk. So they sent us down there, so that when we struck arc, it would light the water up, you see, and they would save the planes, and of course the artillery was there, but we never seen anything, but that was what we were supposed to be there for.
And was this just your battery?
Just ours, just one troop.
One troop of your
one
battery.
Troop. It Hemingham, Hemingham docks, and we were there for so long. We built a hut there. The hut was there, but we had to build it ourselves. And the lads all mucked in, and we built this hut ourselves. And we put the curtains up, and you know, like orange boxes. And
what period of time is this?
It'd be 1940, but we weren't there very long. After we'd built the hut, somebody else got the benefit of it. And somewhere else, this is what the army used to do. I don't know why they used to get moved.
And did you get to a point where you actually got your light onto an aircraft at Hemingham?
No, we never seen one. But they said, of course, when you put the lights on, we couldn't see, like where we were, you couldn't see the water. But it lighted the water up, so if there was anything there, the artillery, which were on the docks, would have seen them, like. But because it's like on the Humber, you know, there, and it's a big, like, estuary. And that, when the lights was on, the searchlights were on, it would light the water up. So if any aircraft landed there, they would know, they would see it. So we were there for about, I think, about 4 months. And then they sent us back all the way to Ripon.
What was it like at Hemingham? Were you close to local population?
Yes,
or?
It was just on the main road between Hemingham village and the docks. It was practically on the docks, but it was a village, like a village, main street. It's only a little place, like. And
how did you get on with the local people there?
Great. They're champion. And in fact, I think I was adopted myself, because we didn't have any water on the camp. And of course, they called me the water carrier. They said, "Geordie," because I was the youngest, "go up to the village and get a couple of cans of water." So I went to this house, the first house I come to, and I went in and I asked this lady, like I said, "Could you give us a couple of cans of water, you know, for the..." She was over the moon, wasn't it, you know, anyway. She was asking us questions, this answer. And anyway, she practically adopted us. And when the sergeant said, "Oh, we want some water," I says, "I'll go on." I was keen to... He says, "You're keen." He says, I'll go on up myself. So he went up myself, because when I used to go with Mrs. Hewitt, that's what they call the lady, she, as soon as I got in, she managed a cup of tea, you know, and a cake. And of course, he smelt a rat, that the sergeant, because every time I volunteered. And anyway, he went up and he met, and he was, she was okay with him. But I was, to me, because I was young, I suppose, I was only 17 or something, 17. And
what were the conditions like down there at the time you were there?
Wet, very wet. We went down there, and it was, the hut was lying on the floor like it was in partitions, and the field was partly waterlogged. And we had to put boards down and sleep on duck boards, away from the water, like, you know, because the grass and that was all wet. And anyway, there was supposed to be a public works or somebody come around to put these huts up, but they never come. So the sergeant said, "We'll put the hut up ourselves," and we put it up ourselves, and we done a good job, like, because some of the lads were tradesmen, like, you know. And we put curtains up. Oh, everything was, you know, like being in a barracks, you know. And this Sergeant Longhorn, he was a sergeant. He used to go across the field shouting his head off with his gumboots on, like a jury. Anyway.
And you said that you never really got into action.
I never. That was in 19... Up till Dunkirk, there wasn't a thing. After Dunkirk, things livened up a bit. But we got.
Were you still there when Dunkirk came, or had you moved by then?
No, I was there. Where was I now? I think I was in Harrogate when Dunkirk was.
So you'd moved back up north again, had you?
Yeah, I would move back from Emigham, because I said we were only there for. Moved. We put the hut up and everything. And got settled down, and then they said, "Well, back to Ripon, in Harrogate." Well, our headquarters was in Ripon, but we were stationed at Harrogate. Well, what was at Harrogate? I don't know. I don't know what we were guarding, but there was aerodromes around there, Lehman and Tishvis and places like that. But they were good way from us, and I used to say we're evacuated, because we never seen a hungry man, and.
Was life better at Harrogate? Were the conditions better?
The farmer, he was a bit niggled when we posted there, because he was accusing us of leaving the gates open and things like that, and letting the cattle out. But it wasn't us. It was other people used to come up this path and to watch us, like, you know, on the searchlight, because, you know, what people are like. Inquisitive. Anyway, I didn't know what was there, but anyway, they dropped a bomb on us. What is this place called? Spofforth, near Harrogate. And we struck arc, but I was in the cabin where we had a two-way radio or something like that. And all of a sudden, there was a big crash. And they bombed. I didn't know what they were trying to searchlight, but it must have been 300 yards from us. And it was near a farm. Of course, all the people around the village come up to see where the bomb had dropped, and the police was there, and they were stopping people from picking shrapnel up, you know, because there was shrapnel. And the police were stopping them tapping the shrapnel. And I was in the hut. I didn't know what happened, because I wasn't on the searchlight at the time. I was on this RT setter. And they were shouting, "Where's it, Buck?" I says, "I'm in the hut." I says, "I don't know where it's, but it's near hand." And anyway, put the sergeant on. So the sergeant comes. Because when the bomb dropped, they doused the light. And anyway, there was only one bomb dropped, but they were thinking, you know, but there was a war on, like, and all the village was up, and the police was up. And what the... They must have just said, "Oh, we'll have a go at this searchlight," because there was no Nina. Anyway.
Did you get the opportunity to get your lights onto enemy aircraft around this area?
Very few. Well, if you got them in the searchlight, they used to take a phase of action, and they would get out of the light, you know, and they would dive and die away. And I don't think searchlights was any good myself. But there you are. It's only my opinion.
It was difficult to hold them once you got the light on.
No, I think that's a waste of time, is it?
If your light got onto an aircraft, did other searchlights come in on it?
They generally used to get away from it, like, you know. When we were training, we used to train them with the RAF. They used to put the lights on so we could get on them.
Did you have a system whereby if damaged British aircraft were coming back, you would indicate where they...
Yeah, well, they used to have the colours of the day. So if you put the light on, the aircraft used to show a flare. And there was either a yellow flare, a red flare, or they used to flash the colours of the letters of the day, like SOS. You know, they used every day, you got colours of the day and letters of the day. So if an aircraft come up and you struck arc, that's what you mean when you put the light on, this aircraft would send a flare out to say that he was British. But there were colours, green, red, green. So that was the colours of the day. And if it didn't have flares, he used to flash you the colours, the letters of the day. Say B, today's letters of the day is B. So you knew you had your Morse code and you used them.
But if British aircraft were coming back from a raid and were damaged, did you have some system where you tried to show them where to land by using your light?
No, we couldn't.
You didn't do that?
We didn't do that, no. We used to come... There used a lot come over from Lincolnshire, that way. They were damaged, like, you know. But there were... Wimpies, they called them. The aircraft. There were only two engine aircraft. Bombers. Wimpies. Wellingtons.
And you worked closely with the RAF?
Yeah, we were supposed to be around Dishworth, but we were miles away from Dishworth, right? But we were in the Layman, Dishworth, places around there, like, they had Wellingtons at Dishworth. But we used to pass it when he used to come home. But otherwise, we were well away from the Royal Air Force.
And so you were at Harrogate when Dunkirk happened, you were saying?
I think it was at Harrogate when Dunkirk happened. And
What memories have you of that event? I mean, it looked as though we were losing the war at that point, didn't it?
Well, yeah.
Did that affect your spirits?
Mostly, up to then, it was the poor lads on the Merchant Navy were saying, getting them worse of it. And in fact, I was telling you about the asses for volunteers to man the lowest guns aboard these, because they didn't have any big guns, had lowest guns aboard these ships, coasters. And one of the lads, well, there was about six of them, went and volunteered, and they went, and they call them Dems now. But in them days, they were just volunteers, lowest gunners. But apparently, when they joined the ship, they went in there, they were paid by the ship. They got seaman's pay, and they were lowest gunners. And one of the lads, there was a bloke called Bert Reed, and he got the George Cross. He was on the lowest gun, and they were being strapped by this plane, a German plane, and the captain was wounded. He got the captain, put him under the steel companionway, and he went back to the lowest gun and got killed. And for that, he got the George Cross, which is a civilian award.
And did you know this chap?
Yes, he was my corporal when we were at Harrogate.